This episode brought to you by Own the Gray podcast. Discover how others age with attitude at ownthegray.ca.
And how the imbalance of hormones can bring this on.
You know, I always say estrogen is responsible for so many things in the body. And we have estrogen receptors all over the body, including in the skin. So what happens with the skin health as we go into perimenopause and menopause and postmenopause is that estrogen levels start to fluctuate and then they start to decline. And, you know, I've seen in many of my clients that, like you were saying, Susan, that the dry skin, you know, you can develop acne, you can develop pigmentation, you can all of a sudden just get very sensitive skin. And what we have to remember is how, you know, what estrogen is responsible for, particularly in the skin. And estrogen actually enables the skin to hold water. So when our levels start to decline or even fluctuate, it can cause the skin to be drier.
The best conversations happen when we're having lunch with our friends, especially when one is a healer. Pull up a chair and join us to expand your knowledge and open your mind.
Allison Blood is a registered nutritional therapist and beauty therapist living in the wilds of Sweden, having worked in the health and wellness industry for over 30 years, specializing globally in menopausal women's health. She now runs her own online clinic, helping women worldwide manage the negative symptoms of menopause. Her mission is to support her clients with changes to diet, health, and lifestyle so they can harness their hormones and get their confidence and sparkle back. And welcome, Allison, to the show.
Oh, thank you, Susan. It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me on your podcast today.
Well, I'm excited about this discussion. Tell me about your journey in the health and wellness industry, please.
Yes, I started, my journey started when I was quite young. I was lucky enough to be brought up on a farm in the south of England. But I was, you know, out in nature at a young age. My mother was a professional chef, so we grew all our own produce, what we now would call organic, but then it was just homegrown foods. So from a very early age, I was in the kitchen. So I became really interested in food and cooking, thanks to my mother and the environment I grew up in. And then when I was a teenager, I developed acne. And it was really not my confidence. You know, it's a sensitive time, isn't it, when you're a teenager, anyway, and having bad skin. And I didn't want to be taking medication. Even at that age, I realized that this isn't something that I wanted to be doing. So I started to look into other areas with nutrition, lifestyle, etc., on how I could improve my skin. And I really got interested in hormones. So that's kind of where my hormone female health interest started. And then I trained to be an esthetician and worked specifically with female hormonal skin problems. And that naturally led me into women that were perimenopausal and menopausal, because that is a time where your skin can all of a sudden just change, you know, as well as puberty. And then I very soon realized that, you know, it's the aesthetic side from the beauty therapy side is brilliant, but you need to work from the within as well. So that's when I went back to university and studied nutritional science and really, you know, put all those things together and started to see fantastic results with my clients' skin. I mean, obviously now I work with all aspects of health, but when specifically with skin health, you know, I was working as an esthetician and with the insight with the nutritional therapy. Very passionate about women's health. You know, I saw as I was growing up, my mother and all the family, female family members really suffering through perimenopause and menopause. And it was kind of, I don't know what it's like in Canada, but in Europe, it's getting better. It is getting better, but it's still a bit, it's not talked about enough. There's a bit of a stigma attached to menopause. It's kind of, oh, just get on with it, you know, brush it under the carpet. So, I've made it my mission for us to talk about menopause and, you know, so women can get the support that they need.
For sure. Today, we're going to talk mainly about how menopause affects the skin. We'll touch on other areas, but this is not just cosmetic, because the skin is really the largest organ in the body. And often what's happening on the skin can indicate things that are happening internally. It's a very important subject from many different viewpoints. So I'm going to start by mentioning some areas that I've noticed how menopause, postmenopause as well, can affect the skin. And then I'd love you to talk about prevention and why this can occur. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is dry skin, skin sensitivity, and how the imbalance of hormones can bring this on.
You know, I always say estrogen is responsible for so many things in the body. And we have estrogen receptors all over the body, including in the skin. So what happens with the skin health as we go into perimenopause and menopause and postmenopause is that estrogen levels start to fluctuate and then they start to decline. And, you know, I've seen in many of my clients that, the like you were saying, Susan, that the dry skin, you know, you can develop acne, you can develop pigmentation, you can all of a sudden just get very sensitive skin. And what we have to remember is how, you know, what estrogen is responsible for, in particularly in the skin. And estrogen actually enables the skin to hold water. So when our levels start to decline or even fluctuate, it can cause the skin to be drier. It's there for what we call sebaceous flow, because our sebaceous glands are what produce oil on our skin. So when this starts to decline, the hormone levels, you know, we can stop producing as much sebaceous flow on the skin, and that can cause dryness. And it can also cause irritation, because we have a natural barrier on the skin. And when those oils are disrupted, you know, this barrier, this protective barrier, isn't there as much anymore. So that can cause like itching and dryness and irritation to things that we maybe weren't sensitive towards before. Estrogen can cause thinning of the skin as well. So you can see, you know, very dry, thin skin. It's also can cause pigmentation. The classical age spots that we see can be due to hormonal fluctuations and decline, and also sun exposure, which is another big topic with skin health. But estrogen really, you know, and testosterone and progesterone, we shouldn't forget the other hormones, really keep the skin looking fresh and plump and youthful. And as the levels start to decline, you know, we can see that we're producing maybe more facial lines because of the dryness, because we also need estrogen to produce collagen in the skin. And collagen is like the structure of the skin. That's what keeps our skin very nice and plump. You know, so estrogen is responsible for so many things. We can see also with clients that we bruise easier, you know, on the skin. And I think as well, when we talk about the skin, we always think of our faces, don't we? But I mean, it's the whole body. And another area I know a lot of my clients suffer with is vaginal dryness. Right. And, you know, that's also, you know, collagen, and we need the lubrication, and that is lost with the declines in estrogen as well. So I think it needs to be thought of as the whole body rather than, you know, just the face, because it affects every part of the skin, really.
Okay, you've touched on so many areas, and we're going to talk about that. You can't prescribe hormone replacement.
No.
Okay, so you are attempting to give your clients natural solutions or some help, both nutritionally and perhaps creams and supplements for the areas that you've mentioned. So is there anything nutritionally that you can do that you have seen that works?
I think, as you were saying, Susan, it's when you come into perimenopause or menopause, and, you know, now we're talking about skin health, it really needs to be tackled from many different areas. You know, what I promote is the healthy lifestyle, the nutrition, mindset as well. But hormone replacement therapy, that if that's suitable for the client and they want to take that, then that certainly is an area, you know, to look. So I feel that we need to have all these things in place, because, as you say, nutrition is very, very important. but you also, you can't replace hormones with nutrition.
Exactly.
But you can help to improve your health and your well-being. And, you know, for example, sugary foods, they're shown in studies to produce what we call, it's actually a horrible phrase, but it's called sugar sag. And this is basically something called glycation. So when we have a diet very high in processed, highly refined foods, this can cause glycation, which is where protein and sugar come together. And this in turn causes like the skin to age. It causes almost like the collagen in the skin becomes brittle. So sugar is very detrimental for the skin if we have a high sugar diet. It really ages the skin. And this has been shown in studies. So, you know, that's one example of how you can improve the skin naturally. Antioxidants, which are very, you know, in fruit and vegetables, really help to prevent what we call oxidation or prevent oxidative damage in the skin, which again can cause aging on the skin. And then you've got, you know, the vitamins that are very crucial for skin health, like vitamin C. This promotes radiant skin and helps with healing and also helps with collagen production. Vitamin E supports skin growth and protection. Vitamin D is needed for skin rejuvenation. And also zinc is needed for normal sebaceous glands, flow of oil on the skin. Healthy fats. You know, fat actually is good for us and we need it in our skin. We're also scared of, I know the generation that I grew up in, we're all terrified of the word fat. It was all low fat diets, wasn't it? But, you know, fat is crucial for the skin. And then protein as well. I mean, there's so many things. So once you get the nutritional part in place and then you look at the lifestyle, and then, you know, the hormone replacement therapy, which obviously, you know, a doctor would be involved in, you've got all the pieces in place then. And you really can see a difference, not just with the skincare, you know, skin health, but with your general health overall during perimenopause and menopause.
I know that there are a lot of women out there who cannot take hormone replacement because of family history. But today we're going to talk about more natural solutions. You've mentioned a few. Let's talk about the sugar thing. I know about glycation, and it's interesting because, you know, it's pretty well impossible to take sugar out of your diet. It's in so many of our foods, even people who are not eating processed foods. If you're, for instance, making something with teriyaki sauce or tamari, if you look on the label, there's sugar in there. I mean, it's about looking at labels and being incredibly diligent, but not all sugars are created equal. What about sugar replacements like stevia? Coconut sugar is a big one. Erythritol. What do you think about these?
Yeah, great question. The research that's cut is that there is more research needed really on this subject, because when you eat sugar or you eat a sugar substitute like stevia, for example, the you know, your body reacts in the same way. I mean, sugar, that taste of sugar already stimulates your body to start producing insulin, which is
right.
the hormone that gets rid of the high or the glucose levels in the circulation. So from what I've looked at through research is that it can have an effect. It can be a little, Mike, you can say that, you know, if you're going to eat highly processed foods that are full of, you know, really refined sugar, right. If you have to eat sweet things, then it's obviously better to eat the sugar substitutes. But it isn't something that I would really recommend, because it still has that effect, you know, the hormonal cascade that happens in the body even when you eat sugar substitutes is really the same. And some of the research that they've been doing now we're talking about artificial sweeteners,
right?
They say that they're even more detrimental than the normal sugar because of it doesn't satisfy you. So for example, if you eat if you drink like a diet soda that has, you know, the zero, that's got no sugar in, but artificial sweeteners, it still stimulates the body for that sugar response, but then you don't get any sugar. So you're not satisfied. And in research, they've seen that this triggers people to eat even more because they're constantly wanting that sugar, sugar and the satisfaction. So I know that was a very long answer to your question, but, you know, ideally, I know in it, when, you know, we have to have a life, don't we? And it is, like you say, very difficult to cut sugar out. I would recommend, and I recommend to my clients, just try, you know, majority of the time, like 80% of the time, to eat whole foods. You know, if it has a list of ingredients on the back that you don't understand what they are, then don't buy it.
Exactly.
Just whole a food that you can see. I know what that is. That's a piece of broccoli. That's a chicken. That's a soya. You know, a whole unit.
Right. Okay. What about bread? And again, not all bread is created equal. And in fact, in Europe, the grains are very different than in North America. Do you eat bread?
Yes, I eat bread. As a nutritional therapist, I don't personally. Obviously, it depends on what bread you're eating. There's a very wide range. Right. There is nothing wrong with bread. It's like, why has bread suddenly become this taboo thing to eat? It's like potatoes. Everybody, it's suddenly become petrified of potatoes. I mean, potato is actually a vegetable.
Yeah, there's white potato.
Yeah, the potato. It's what we do with it and how we eat it and deep fry it, etc., that makes it into more of an unhealthy option. But going back to bread, you know, we've been eating bread for hundreds of years, haven't we? The bread is like a staple food. But what's happened is that the grains and the ingredients that we make the bread with, we've changed that so much, you know, from growing one crop a year to, you know, genetically modifying them, spraying them with all these chemicals.
Right.
That now people are having problems eating bread because of what we've done to it, basically. So what I would recommend is really try to buy, you know, a loaf of bread that hasn't been interfered with, you know, something like from a baker that's been made by hand, that has, you know, proper whole grains in, rather than the white bread. I mean, white bread is just basically like sugar. It's so refined. But if you eat whole grain bread, you know, from a good source, there really is nothing wrong with bread. And okay, if you've got gluten sensitivities or, you know, you're allergic to gluten, that's a completely different discussion. But I don't personally feel that bread is a problem. And like you say, bread's delicious and we all love bread. Why should we eat bread? It's just being more mindful of what bread you eat.
Do you eat mainly sourdough?
Yeah, I do. I love sourdough. I eat sourdough. Okay. And I'm very lucky living in Sweden because Sweden, they bread is a big thing here, but they really like the dark breads, you know, the real brown wholemeal breads. So I tend to eat more of the dark breads and sourdough I love. Yeah. I actually, a few years ago, made my own. I had my yeast going in the fridge and that was great fun.
A lot of work though.
Yeah, it
is. Yeah, but delicious. I mean, the smell of fresh bread baking. Oh my, yeah.
Delicious.
Heavenly. Yeah. Heavenly. What about the vitamin C that you're talking about? Are you talking about foods with vitamin C, supplementing with vitamin C tablets? What do you recommend there?
I always say food first. Because, you know, when you eat some, if you eat a citrus fruit, for example, which has a good amount of vitamin C in, you know, you not only get the vitamin C, but you get the fiber and the other nutrients in the fruit. Supplementation is great, but I wouldn't just recommend supplementation for, I would always try and put food first. So when I say vitamin C, you know, things like your fruits, your citrus fruits, peppers are very rich in vitamin C, you know, broccoli, all your fruit and vegetables, really, to get that into your diet. If you find it difficult to eat those products, which, you know, we all need fruit and vegetables, then supplementation is okay. But I would always want to say food first, really, before people start taking supplements.
And what about vitamin C serums? Do they help remove pigmentation from the skin? It's difficult to remove once it's there.
It is. It's very difficult. And, you know, we can't blame everything on menopause. I think as we get older, how we've lived our life when we were younger starts to show in the skin. You know, it's the sun, basically. If you were born in a generation where we didn't, I mean, I remember I actually lived in the States for quite a few years when I was a teenager, and, you know, nobody, sunscreen didn't really exist. Right. And you would just lie on the beach with I think it was a Hawaiian tropic oil that smelled very nice of coconuts, but it didn't have any sun protection factor. Right. So, you know, you were damaging your skin. And when you get into menopause, that's when it shows up and you start getting these pigmentation areas. The best, it's very difficult, as you said, Susan, to remove pigmentation. Some of the recommendations, vitamin C products, like you say, they can help. Retinol A, so vitamin A, that is, I really like that in products for older women, because that really helps to exfoliate the skin and also help with pigmentation. And then you've got professional treatments like laser treatments. But the main thing, really crucial, is to use a day cream that has a sun protection factor in, at least 30. Research is showing that we need to have 30 plus now, it all year round, you know, because you really need to protect your skin from sun damage. Most good quality day creams that you buy now do have sunscreen in.
Yeah. And the vitamin D, I know that I think that's the super vitamin that everyone needs, that a lot of people are deficient in. But what about just getting natural sunshine, you know, without sunscreen? Because if you do wear sunscreen, you are not allowing the crucial sunshine to get into your body. So, you know, what do you do in Sweden?
Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, the winter months here can be very dark. But yes, you need sunlight on the skin for the vitamin D production. And vitamin D is actually quite difficult to get the amounts that we need through our diet, because it's not in that many things, you know, eggs, certain fish. It's very difficult to get those amounts. So, you know, I take a vitamin D supplement, and I know in many countries in Europe, they actually even, you know, the government actually recommends that people take a supplementation, because you just can't get that from what you eat or sunlight. And, you know, even if they say in studies that 15 to 20 minutes, you know, without a sunscreen on, if you're sitting in the sun, you need to cause a slight erythema, so a redness on the skin for that production to happen. So yeah, it's a good point. You know, you can't, if you're wearing sunscreen the whole time, you it will be difficult for your body to produce vitamin D. But I think that's probably the only supplement that I would really, for people living more in Northern Europe or in darker, you know, to take, because we just can't get enough of it.
Yeah. You talked about you can get zinc from certain foods. What would some of those foods be?
Yeah, zinc is in meat, so meat products. And then it's also great nuts, like nuts and seeds and, you know, meat, chicken, pork, meat-based products. There's a little bit in fish. But nuts, seeds, walnuts are a great source of zinc.
I'm curious if you have any recommendations for superfoods for aging women. You know, there are so many superfoods out there. You just don't know what to do.
No, it becomes overwhelming, really, doesn't it? Uh-huh. What I say, and that this is also backed up by research, is that what you want to think about with your diet for skin health and menopausal health is variation. You know, the superfoods, you know, there's many fantastic foods that give us so many different nutrients, like blueberries, for example. I mean, they're just great. They've got so many antioxidants and phytonutrients and everything in. But if you eat a varied diet, more of what we call like a Mediterranean style diet, with red meat, but a small amount, vegetables, fruits, nuts and seeds, your healthy fats like your olive oil, avocados, coconut oil, butter, all your lovely healthy fats and legumes, you know, your beans, your peas. That really is the basis. Okay, you've got all these, what they call superfoods, but you just need to eat a variation of food. I think, you know, it's all about sales as well, isn't it, with these superfoods, that this can do this, this can do that. I think if you just stick to eating a varied diet based on whole foods, you know, that's the best way to improve your health and to improve your skin.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. What about alcohol? How does alcohol affect the skin?
Alcohol is very dehydrating. It causes stress on the skin, basically. So when you drink alcohol, it has many effects on the body. One of the things that happens is that it increases your blood sugar because there is a lot of sugar in alcohol, and high blood sugar levels, especially when you're coming into perimenopause and menopause, you know, it's shown that women can become insulin resistant as they go into this phase due to estrogen levels, etc. So, you know, it really doesn't do the skin any favors. It really kind of dries everything out, and it's aging on the skin. You know, going back to the glycation and you know, the affecting the collagen in the skin. And it also affects our gut bacteria that's affected by many things, which we need. And that is actually shown for our overall health, but also for skin health. You know, the good bugs in the gut are crucial for skin health. It's actually very interesting. I was reading an article last week about the research they're doing on the skin's microbiome, like the outside of our skin, you know, that has its own microbiome, like bacteria on the skin, at how a lot of products are now trying to develop creams with probiotics in, which are the good bacteria to maybe work with certain skin conditions to help balance the skin out and feed it with the good bacteria. So that's a fascinating subject, I think, the bacteria in our bodies.
It is. And I was going to get to that. Gut issues definitely can affect our skin. To go along with that, I was going to ask you about stress. How stress affects our skin, which then affects our gut.
Yeah, stress, you could talk about stress for hours, really, couldn't you? And how detrimental it is to our health. And, you know, from the skincare point of view, I mean, stress is not good for our skin. It really ages. I mean, you can see people, if someone's had a very stressful life, that, you know, you can see it in their face, can't you? You can really see how their skin is duller, maybe slightly more lined. And this, one of the reasons, is due to the stress hormones that we constantly produce when we're in this chronic state of stress, one of them being cortisol. And cortisol, amongst other things, can affect the sebaceous flow, so the flow of oil on the skin, and it can actually trigger off, you know, acne. For example, if we're constantly stressed, that can cause inflammation on the skin and can be one of the reasons that we develop acne in later life. But it just really just ages the skin due to all the hormone imbalances, due to us feeling, you know, uptight and tired, you know, because if you're constantly stressed, you're maybe not sleeping as well. I mean, and that's another
area. That was my next one.
Sleep. Terrible if you don't sleep on the skin.
How does it affect the skin? Lack of sleep.
Lack of sleep. We need sleep for everything, but it's rejuvenating. You know, when we're asleep, our bodies rejuvenate. You know, it gets rid of all the toxins in the body. It really helps to revive us. So if we're not getting sleep, you know, the skin isn't getting the nutrients that it needs. It you know, it's really not resting and being detoxified. And also, not sleeping, it affects blood sugar, which affects the skin. You know, it affects stress hormones. They've shown in research, if you don't sleep well, then you're more likely the next day to crave like really sugary carbohydrate foods. you know, so it just has a knock-on effect on everything. It's very related as well to weight gain in menopause, lack of sleep. It's crucial for maintaining, you know, weight management.
How does that affect women's weight gain in the belly area?
Yeah, the hunger hormones are fascinating, aren't they? And yeah. Another point is that estrogen actually is a hunger suppressant, which a lot of people don't realize. So when your levels start to decline and it fluctuate, you know, that can make us hungrier. You can think, why am I? I'm just constantly eating and never feeling satisfied. Mm. And also it has an effect. Estrogen has an effect on the ghrelin and leptin as well. Those hormones that we produce, which we call our hunger hormones. But the fat, the belly area, we tend to, when we go into menopause, a lot of women find that they go from like a pear shape more right. to an apple. So you collect abdominal fat. Due to, I mean, I think weight gain in menopause is an area that needs more research. We don't fully understand it. But one of the areas of that we know about is sleep affects that because of the cortisol levels. Cortisol levels are basically, if you've got high cortisol levels, cortisol will store fat and it will store fat around the belly area. So if you're chronically stressed and not sleeping, your body stores fat around the abdominal area. Also, blood sugar, insulin is a fat-storing hormone. And again, that comes around the middle area. And it's also been shown that androgens, so sex hormones, testosterone, male sex hormones, they when we go into this phase in our lives, they can become... Everything becomes a bit unbalanced. So testosterone levels can become slightly higher. And this can lead also to this collection of fat around the middle area. And I think as well, another, the human body is amazing, really, that, you know, when we stop producing estrogen or when we start ovulating, our adrenal glands, which sit on top of our kidneys, actually produce a very small amount of female sex hormones. And when we're very stressed, your body realizes, okay, well, I need a small amount of estrogen, but it will always prioritize the stress hormones, the production, because they're also produced from the adrenal glands. So cortisol, for example. So your body will be producing less estrogen, that little bit that it will produce from the adrenal glands. And what happens then is, because the body's thinking, oh, we need estrogen, I'm going to have to store some of this because I don't know when it's coming back. And it stores it around the belly area. And that's called hormonal fat. Because a lot of the time, women that have this around the abdomen, it is hormonal fat. And it's your body's way of storing estrogen. And that is very difficult to get rid of. So it's all, you know, it's all like entangled, really, isn't it? In stress and sleep, and then, you know, it's all a big circle.
Right, because it's all connected. Yeah. So then that's where your lifestyle changes are extremely important to keep stress in balance. Do you recommend exercise, meditation?
Yes, exercise crucial for stress management and really finding, I think when I work with clients, really try to find a realistic solutions because everybody's busy. We haven't got time to go to the gym for a couple of hours every day. You know, finding something that works for you, it's more movement, isn't it? You know, if you just go out for a 10-minute walk daily or do a 10-minute workout at home, something that you can do regularly that works for you. But exercise is very important for stress management, amongst other things. It really helps to keep everything in balance. Meditation, if you can do that, fantastic. Yoga, I'm a big believer in breathing exercises, really, really beneficial and easy to do. You know, just giving you that time to just step back and be mindful of what you're doing. And you can actually do deep breathing, you know, when you're sat at work or if you feel yourself becoming overwhelmed, just even just take a few deep breaths are really beneficial. And I always say to people, you know, when you come into menopause, just be nice to yourself. You need that little bit of extra care, because it is a big change. And, you know, it's totally natural. It's not a disease or anything, but, you know, allow yourself to look after yourself and say it's okay to take care of yourself.
Right. Absolutely. Have you found that intermittent fasting, I don't even know if you recommend it to your clients, can help the skin and the wrinkling?
Yeah, I do recommend it. I work very individually with clients. It obviously depends on many different factors. But if it suits the client and I think that it will help them, then I do actually recommend intermittent fasting, because I think not only for skin health, but for many other bodily function, it can be very beneficial. Skin health, I must say, I haven't actually worked with so many clients that specifically wanted skin health. There's normally many other things, you know, going on as well with their health goals. But I think skin health, when you look at intermittent fasting, because it gives the body chance to rest, you know, your digestion and you know, it gets rid of toxins, that it would be beneficial for skin health, because you wouldn't maybe hopefully not be eating as much sugar and processed refined foods. And it also helps the body to renew a lot better. So it yeah, would be beneficial for collagen synthesis.
Yeah, I agree. You've talked a lot about collagen, which is crucial as we get older. Do you recommend collagen supplements or getting our collagen from our diet as well? And that leads me into eating meat. A lot of people, I mean, it's the vegan, the plant-based diets. How do you feel about all that? And how it affects the skin?
Yeah, collagen, as you say, is crucial, isn't it? I mean, it's the structure of our skin, and we need it not just in our skin. We need it for joints and, you know, it's all over our body. So I always believe in food first. But there is actually some very interesting research about collagen supplementation, how beneficial that can actually be. So I'm not, absolutely not against collagen supplementation, but again, I would always recommend that somebody, you know, before they start taking any sort of supplements, talk to a healthcare professional that it suits you, because mm-hmm, there's so many different interactions if you're on medication, etc. Right. But find a very good quality collagen supplement if that's what you want to do, or, you know, try and get it from the foods that you're eating, and you know, it is predominantly in animal products.
Exactly.
When we're talking about veganism and vegetarian, you know, everyone to their own, do what you feel, whether it's to do with your beliefs or et cetera. You know, I think I respect everyone's own choice of what they want to eat. But I personally don't have a problem, you know, eating meat, but I would rather eat a good quality organic piece of meat less often than just eat very highly processed meat that has, you know, hormones and you know, it's had some, you know, it's not very beneficial for the body. It's terrible, really, the quality of animal products that is out on the market, really, because it is so detrimental for health. And you know, there's hormones and antibiotics, etc., in some of these products that don't really benefit health, and they certainly don't benefit hormonal health for women in menopause. But I think, it again, going back to what we were talking about bread, it's, you know, there's nothing wrong with meat. It's just what we've done to it. There's so many nutrients in meat. I mean, iron, for example, is right, really, yeah, women we need. There's so many women that are deficient in iron, and the iron that comes from meat, our body takes up and absorbs very easily, whereas the iron in like spinach is one that, it's, you know, there is iron in spinach, but for the body to actually use that and utilize it, it's very difficult.
As we get older, I believe women potentially need even more protein to keep the collagen levels higher. And I know that you can get it in a plant-based diet, but it is more difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I'm with you on that. I mean, I'm a big preacher of protein, and we need it for, you know, so many things as we get older, and as we become perimenopausal and menopausal, we gradually lose muscle mass. That's kind of a natural, it's a natural aging phase, but it's also increased with the lack of hormones. And protein is crucial for you know, muscle,
right?
Keeping those muscles there. And we really need to eat protein with every meal. I tend to say about a palm size of a good quality protein with every meal. And we don't in general tend to eat that amount of protein, but it's also very satisfying. So if you eat more protein, you'll find that you won't get cravings. You won't eat as much food because it keeps you fuller for longer.
Definitely. What about dairy? Can dairy adversely affect the skin?
Dairy has been shown in studies that if you suffer from acne, you know, real problem skin, that it can be a trigger for that. So, you know, maybe if you do have skin problems, then you could do an elimination and see if your skin gets better. And also skin allergies, you know, like and skin conditions like eczema, psoriasis, you know, very, very sensitive skin, acne, rosacea. Really cutting out dairy, it's shown that it can be an irritant to you know, skin in general. And I mean, dairy, it's another, going back to what you were talking about, bread. I mean, that's, dairy's been demonized as well, hasn't it, really? There's so many people that don't eat dairy. And, you know, if you're allergic then, or you have lactose intolerance, then of course, but you know, there are many good nutrients in dairy. And again, it's going back to the source of where it comes from.
Yeah.
Because there are, you know, a lot of dairy products that are full of, you know, maybe chemicals and hormones, et cetera, that we don't want to eat. But you just have to be mindful of what you're buying.
Yeah. I love your attitude. I mean, it's balanced. It's not radical. It's something people can sustain. I do want to ask you, what's a daily non-negotiable for you?
Daily non-negotiable. Are we talking about food now, just in general?
It can be food or it can be in general. Yeah.
Yeah. Good question. One thing that I do every day that I would be quite upset if I didn't, I drink a big pint of water, lemon water, in the morning. That's the first thing that I do when I get up. Slightly warm.
How much?
A pint. What's that? That's like a big glass.
It's not as much as a liter. It's not.
No, not a liter. It's probably about a third of a liter.
Okay.
Like a glass about this big.
Okay.
Because that really, it's like it kind of washes your system out, and it also, you know, hydrates you, because a lot of the time you're dehydrated after a night's sleep. That's a non-negotiable. And I'm going to give you another one now. I love the benefits of it is matcha tea. Have you heard of
really?
Matcha tea?
Yes, of course.
A green tea. It's a powder,
right? And
loaded with so many nutrients, phytonutrients, and that is a non-negotiable. So big glass of lemon water and a big mug of matcha tea are definitely things that I wouldn't be without daily.
Is it warm matcha tea? Because I think you can have it cold and warm. Is it warm?
I have mine. I basically just take a small teaspoon of the powder and pour boiling water on it. But you can have it cold, or you can actually put the powder in a smoothie or use it anyway.
Okay. Do you take a green tea supplement?
I don't, but I drink a lot of green tea.
Do you? Okay. Do you drink coffee? How do you feel about coffee?
I don't actually drink coffee, but that isn't really for any health, you know, reasons. Coffee's never been my thing.
Okay.
And I think coffee in moderation is fine. I would just recommend, if you're having sleep issues, to stop drinking at midday, because it has got caffeine in, which can really stimulate and have problems with sleep. But I mean, coffee's been shown to have many health benefits.
Oh, absolutely. Doesn't
it's how you drink it, isn't it? Sorry, so yes. It's how you drink your coffee. If you have a big latte with a sugar and loads of syrup and everything else in it, then it's maybe not as good.
Oh, I totally agree. But green tea has caffeine too, doesn't it?
Yes. Green tea has caffeine. Absolutely. I tend to have my green teas. I will maybe have one 12:30, 1 o'clock, and then I won't have any anymore. Right.
Right. Okay. This has been really interesting. Great tips. Where can my listeners find you, Alison?
The best place to find me is on my website, which is alisonblad.com. That's B-L-A-D-H. Also on the website, I've on my resources page, there's many free downloads. And there's actually an ebook there on specifically on how to boost your skin health with recipes and meal plans, etc. And then I'm on all social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok. I'm on all of them. And you can just TikTok. Find that. No, I started with that a few months ago. It's a different experience than the other ones, but it's quite fun.
I bet. I've checked out your Instagram and your website. They're fantastic. And I would urge my listeners to do so as well. This has been wonderful. I really appreciate you coming on. And thank you very much for appearing on Lunch with a Healer.
Oh, thank you, Susan. It's a pleasure talking to you, and I've really enjoyed our conversation today.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and share it with your friends. And join us next time for Lunch with a Healer. Your thoughts with us. Your comments, questions, and suggestions are all welcome. Go to speakpipe.com/lunchwithahealer and record your message. Try it out today.